Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXOradio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You're listening to Let's Talk About It, your weekly wellness radio for Mexicali and Imperial Valley cities. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7. Our radio here at the station is 337-8874.
337-8874 is the phone number. We are. Let's talk about it. I'm Scott. She's Maria. And we got Greg Curran. Right?
Yes.
Curran.
Curran.
I want to dress up your name and put the accent on the wrong syllable. So Curran.
Curran.
Okay. Greg Curran. He's a program manager over at Clínicas de Salud de Pueblo. And he is their HIV coordinator dude. Are you not?
So basically, my official title is HIV Family Planning Program Manager.
Great. So
for Clínicas de Salud.
Let's do about 45 minutes of all things HIV and get this out in the public so that we can
HIV, you know, when it first came out, nobody knew about it, and then it just was, everybody got panicked back in the U.S. 80s, 90s.
Yeah, it was like the Y2K of sexual transmitted diseases or something.
And then it was, if you got HIV, it was a death sentence.
It was like herpes, only worse.
Definitely worse. Yeah, because it was, the test came out in 1985. Mm-hmm. Before they were having, you know, what they called the gay man's disease. There was things going on in the gay community where men were dying. And they couldn't figure it out, and then it was called GRID, Gay Men Something, I even forget what it was so far. But I've been actually working in the area of HIV since, like, 1985, infected and affected with, in 85, I got diagnosed myself, and basically it was changed my life. And so I sort of dedicated my life. At that point, I had to make a decision if I was going to, you know, live or if I was going to die. Because some people, it was like a mental thing, too. I mean, you accept that it's a death sentence, then it will be. Mm-hmm. Okay, I said, I'm going to empower myself and learn as much as I can and do what I can. So I've been working in that area, actually, as a volunteer peer advocate when there was no really medical services or treatments. There was only support groups of mental health and things like that. And then because people were disowned by their families, ostracized by community, they needed to come together, stick together. So this organization, Being Alive, was created in San Diego, and it was for people living with, by people living with HIV as their family, as their extended family.
Yeah, there was so much fear back then. You couldn't even, you know what, no, I don't want to use public restrooms. I don't want to even want to take the hand of somebody that has, you know, HIV. Oh, it wasn't HIV, it was AIDS. You know, even if you had only the HIV virus.
Yeah, it was considered AIDS,
yeah.
So a lot of people still don't distinguish between the two. HIV is like you're still asymptomatic, you have the virus, nothing's going on, but AIDS is you have developed symptoms, and, you know, your immune system is more compromised, so.
So that's a 25-year anniversary.
Yeah.
For you.
Yeah. And so, you know, basically you're right. You're absolutely right. Whenever you go to the get medical care or the dentist or anything like that, you know, people would, like, wear gloves and asbestos suits and things like that. So it was like,
it made
you feel like,
Yeah.
Like you were really bad or something like that. So the stigma that it created. But anyway, yeah, so I've been working in that area since 1986 as a volunteer, and then in San Diego County, in a lot of different areas. You know, the Holistic AIDS Response Program. I worked for HIV for Low Income Housing, and actually for a short period for a pharmacy as a consumer relations specialist. So, you know, I covered the whole area.
So you've been around.
I've been around. And that's what, you know, that's what I dedicated my, you know, my whole career to at that point, you know, before I was doing other things, again, always nonprofit. And then, for some reason, I just got burned out and at my last position, and I took 2 years off And that's what I was telling you earlier. I moved out to the middle of nowhere in the off the grid in Inkopa and start building the straw bale house and, you know, getting solar panels and wind generators going. But then that was a healing process for me, because after you do that work for so long, it just takes a lot out of you.
And I can imagine, I mean, just, you know, going, the working with HIV, it's just, you know, the families, the people that have been affected, and it's just so, I mean, the stories that you might, I mean, the constant, you know, people coming to you and telling you, and that's,
and, you know, you have to do a constant, like, training, you have to keep on, you know, because you're trained to be detached, but how can you be detached? I mean, these people, you know, you come into you, you have a relationship with them. And basically, like you said early on, when I was working for the Holistic AIDS Response Program, you know, we had a good support system because it was all these practitioners, these beautiful people who were coming in and volunteering their time, chiropractic, acupuncture, massage, you know, hypnotherapy, you name it. They were coming, you know, and volunteering their time because they seen such a great need. So the beautiful thing was the community did come together and was supportive, but we were losing people, like 8 people a week.
Even with that type of holistic response.
Right. And back then, like I said, in 85, 86, 87, there was no treatment. And when they did come out with a treatment, it was a monotherapy, which we find out today is really a bad thing, and that was AZT. And the reason it's bad because you're trying to contain the virus with one medication, and it becomes resistant really fast to that medication. So now the treatment is you come at it with a lot of different drugs, or, you know, approach the virus in a lot of different ways, so that you're
interrupting. Just tie it up, keep it busy.
Yeah, well, you're interrupting it, you know, yeah. It's replication, yeah. But anyway, so that's, now we're here. In 2010, from 1985, and so we do have a lot of treatments, and they're actually the focus of a couple conferences that I've been to recently. The focus is now, really, they're getting back to looking at a cure, because you can manage it with all the new medications that they have, but basically there's still long-term side effects of the medication. Some people are becoming resistant to the medications, and they run out of options, so people are getting a little apathetic. They still think that people are okay. They're living. It's a manageable disease, like
diabetes
or something like
that.
That
is true. I mean, because I'm one of the it could be
wrong. Oh yeah, yeah. But people are still dying, and particularly, unfortunately, I think in the Valley we're like 10 years behind. People in the Imperial Valley.
That's what you said, 19 well, something, a
yeah.
couple of minutes ago.
I mean,
you were naming
the Valley,
right?
Yeah. Well, the Valley is very conservative.
And they're conservative and
limited resources, too. Limited resources.
Limited resources, or just not aware of the resources. But, you know, people, and I think the biggest barrier is people really don't think that they're at risk. They still are on that mindset that it's a gay man's disease. You look at Africa, it's a heterosexual disease. And basically in the Valley, there's a lot of other barriers, the stigma, cultural, religious, and people just don't believe they're at risk. So,
is there, for that belief of not being at risk, is there a price people pay in terms of transmission? Does that make the Valley a place where people are more likely to contract this because they aren't?
They don't think that they're at risk.
Balancing their costs.
There's several things, and that's good that you hit on that, because I was going to cover that. You know, the challenges and barriers. We're a border community. Anytime you get a border community with your Mexico, a large one like San Ysidro or here in Calexico and Mexicali, the transmission rate is 2 times greater than the general population of either country. So in the border, it's 2 times greater to become infected. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that, you know, they consider that the border area is a hot spot because, you know, there's a lot of migrant workers, there's a lot of sex, there's a lot of drugs, there's a lot of rock and roll. No. But, you know, people, having sex for money, having sex for drugs, they're disenfranchised, they're away from their families, they're depressed, they're gambling. You know, I'm not saying everybody, but, you know, that's what happens when you get when you're away from your home and you're away from your family and you're poor.
Mm-hmm.
It's a poor population. And so there's a lot of dynamics that happen in the migrant community and in the border communities. And so, yeah, that's really what we call a hot spot of transmission of not just HIV, but of STDs and other things. So, and then we hit on this a little bit. The biggest thing in the valley, the biggest challenge here, is stigma. You know, people still, they'd rather be labeled something else, a drug addict or whatever, than someone who's living with HIV. Okay, and the biggest idea. They did a study, actually, in all the countries of Mexico, and they asked several questions. Would you have someone in your home who was of a different religion? Would you have someone in your home that was a different race? Would you have someone in your home that's HIV positive? And the biggest thing was that they didn't want is to have somebody in their home that was gay or had sex with the same sex. So it was an interesting study.
Yeah, because it's very cool. I mean, that's very the macho man, you know, that is Latino.
And that's the scariest thing because, you know, in this community, in a lot of cultures, you know, a Latino culture and there's other cultures around the world, that they have sex with men, but as long as they're not they're not anal receptive, or if they don't, oral, they're oral receptive, basically they all have sex with men, but they don't consider themselves gay. And so they have a wife, they have a family, but, you know, they like a lot of the cultures, they have sex with men and they don't think anything of it. But it's still a stigma to be labeled gay, okay, or completely homosexual.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting, those dynamics. And then basically, again, in my challenge in education and outreach and prevention is the men just don't, the heterosexual men just don't get involved. Basically, we have to teach the women. It's the women who teach the man about health and stuff like that. And then, and unfortunately, a lot of the Latinos are still people who are, passive. The man's the head of the house, and they don't want to use a condom to have sex. They might have multiple partners outside the marriage. You know, the wife doesn't know. And that's the tragedy in the valley. We have the increase of women being infected, and then not really knowing because the male has
gotten
tested.
Well, yeah, because and especially the women, they're married. You know, that's
No, I'm not at risk.
It is.
I'm married, and my husband's monogamous. Right.
That's I found out. You know, when I got pregnant. You know when that was one of the tests that they gave, HIV test. And I go, why? And I go, why are you giving now HIV test? Just to be, just to be cautious, just a precaution, just to make sure that everything's okay. And it's true. What you're saying is that
I might say,
hey, I've been monogamous, I've been faithful, with my partner and everything, my husband, but
either way,
maybe who knows? Somewhere I got it, someplace, when I was single. I don't know.
Right. Either way, male or female, you really never know 100% what your partner's sexual history was, how many partners they've had in the past, or anything. So what you were talking about is a good practice, and we've incorporated that at Clinica Safe Salute. It's called universal testing. It's just reducing the stigma, making it like any other thing. If you're of reproductive age, you come in for a medical workup or something like that, your physical, that's just a regular, just another one.
We test blood sugar and we test HIV.
Yeah. And you can, if you question it, you have the option to opt out of doing that test, but I think it's a good practice. And what we try to implement is basically somebody who's of reproductive age at least doing the test one time in their life. Now, if they're at high risk, and high risk basically means if you're trying to have a baby, if you're having unprotected sex, if you're a pregnant woman.
Wow, that's it.
Yeah, so that's everybody. So if you're having unprotected sex, and particularly if you have multiple partners, if you use IV drug use, if you're a man who has sex with men, you know, these are all high-risk groups, and basically they look at that a little differently and do testing more often for that those populations.
But even then, you know, when they did that, it was just, oh, my gosh, they're doing the HIV. And it just, like, in the back of my head, what if? You know, it's very scary.
I know, it is. For a lot of people.
Well, and it's interesting that we don't have the same response to a diabetes test, because that same what if is floating out there. You know, it's like, I may not have done anything in particularly to contract it, but I may have it, and I may be walking around with it and not know.
That test, you know, now that I remember when I was pregnant, they just, yeah, they did that HIV, they did the diabetes, but the diabetes was like, oh, okay,
But
they did lifelong, you know, disease, but you know, that the HIV, it's just like,
it's more of a stigma, more of a, you know, and the anxiety while you're waiting for the results. That's why it's so great to have several new tests now, you know, that you can get your results like in 20 minutes. And so, you know, you don't have the anxiety. They always do a, you know, what they call confirmatory tests to draw in the blood. Mm-hmm. But you could do the swab, you could do the prick, and you can get your results in 20 minutes. So while someone's waiting for the results, you don't have to wait that 2 weeks anymore, and live in fear and anxiety and all these stressors that causes, and you can get it in 20 minutes, and then if you're not. And then if you, you know, just say you do have a positive result, and there's someone right there to hook you up with the different services and to counsel you and let you know this is not a life-threatening situation anymore, and some people still believe that it is. So yeah, a lot has changed since 1985.
I've got a question. Is testing, well, first of all, let me throw this out because it's 8 o'clock. You're listening to KUBO FM radio of Central California. Beep. It's 8 o'clock. This is the Radio Bilingue. We are Let's Talk About It. I'm Scott. She's Maria. We got Greg Cran here. He's a program manager for Clínicas de Salud de Pueblo Incorporated. Wearing that on your chest, huh? And HIV coordinator, amongst other things. We're talking about HIV, AIDS, and we're talking all things after the Imperial Valley. And welcome back. If you have any calls or questions, give us a call, 337-8874. Greg, I got a question. So has testing become ubiquitous enough, universal enough, perhaps, that we are able to see in real time or in some sort of statistical sense the... you mentioned that border areas have 2 times the transmission rate of HIV that general non-Kansas or, you know, somewhere in the stick. Do we see that locally? I mean, has testing become common enough here that we're able to see that this, in fact, does have the higher risk transmission rate of the border area, and so hence we should be more careful? I mean, do you get the numbers here? Do you get the positive tests here in the valley that would tell us that? Or is denial still working?
Our numbers are really skewed in the Imperial Valley, and there's several reasons for that. I'm going to hit on the first one that's really sensitive to me. Our HIV state.
Well, that's a good question.
State budget cuts. Arnold had eliminated a lot of the HIV services. One of the ones were we were getting free HIV tests. Now, you know, now people have to pay, and they have to go to the county health department or use their medical insurance to get to. Before, it was in a better setting at an STD testing site, and it was free.
I remember. So, I mean, I did that because I worked for alcohol and drugs, and we used to refer, you know, clients to get their HIV test. And I went in there and I said, you know, just to experience that when I first started. Mm-hmm. So even then, going back, even though I've had HIV testing more than once, it's still the last time when I was pregnant, it's still scary. But I went through that, and I remember people would go in there, it was free, you know, just, I went there, it didn't cost me anything. Mm-hmm. But that was, now we're feeling it.
Yeah, we are. It's getting, you know, again, getting back to the state budget cuts, they not only did they cut, you know, the testing, monies for testing, they also, for prevention and outreach and education and even, services like in-home supportive services, which were, mm-hmm. with people ill, they need assistance, and now what happens to them? They get sick and they end up in the emergency room, you know, and it costs the state more, you know, and who knows what the rates of HIV, the numbers of HIV positive are going to be more because of these things. I don't know.
Was it a legitimate sense of problem solved that led the state to do that, or was it just a matter of political pressure that you guys didn't have enough people in the room saying, hey, what about us?
No, we had enough. I mean, we pressured, but I think it was just an ignorant decision, in my opinion.
Maybe the sense was, well, you know, this was important, you know, 10, 15 years ago, but
not
now everybody...
Because now maybe...
tested everybody.
Exactly. Maybe now that it's more manageable and you can manage it with medication.
I don't want to believe there's a lot...
hard to believe that.
Yeah, hard to believe that the people in that position in legislation... don't have a clue, you know, so I'm just like...
Well, now it's different.
The voters
of California voted, and it's,
yeah.
You know, a lot of...
Well, and there's always going to be competing priorities, always.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, Governor Brown will look at this and revisit this and maybe reinstate some of the HIV funding, I don't know, but... it couldn't be any worse.
So one of the reasons, let's go back to this, one of the reasons Imperial Valley might not realize that they're a higher risk area for transmission is because there are no free tests anymore. What are some of the other reasons?
Oh, the other reasons, like I mentioned, the prevention, education. We used to have the county, used to have outreach workers, Clínica de Salud. They still, thank God, they are committed to health issues. And they have several outreach programs, even though our program was decreased. We used to have a multidisciplinary team that was providing health, mental health. It was providing health education, risk reduction. It was for treatment education, along with our two HIV part-time specialist doctors and our case managers. They did away with all that. Now all we have is part-time. I'm 30% HIV program manager.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be 100%. I have one case manager, the county has one case manager, and we have two part-time HIV specialists. And the one works part-time, you know, works most of his time in Riverside. So we have a reduction in services and education. That's one reason. And the other reason is basically, again, our outreach. You know, we used to, you know, part of my job, the Bridge program, that's how I got introduced to Clinicas. I was the outreach person. I was the first contact, and I would go out and do all these community presentations, educating, and then I would work really closely with our other outreach programs that do work on health issues, which is CCG, which is the Community Challenge Grant, which works directly with youth and health issues, Promotoras, that work with mostly the migrant farm workers, and we have the Windows to Health that works more with the binational patient, and so we still have in place a lot of these, but not to the extent that we used to, you know, with the outreach and education. But thank goodness, Clinic is committed to doing this, and we're still providing that service, even though we're not getting funded for it.
You know, with your you know, basically 25 years of working with HIV, you know, basically California, and because it really sprang up here in a way, this has been the place where we've, you know, this has been the laboratory. Have we been able to figure out, how to best focus our prevention dollars? I mean, is this universal? Is this something we should talk to kids in fourth and fifth grades about? Is this something that we should go out and go to gay bars and talk about? Where do you spend your prevention money so that you really do impact prevention? You prevent people from contracting HIV?
Here, it's a completely different animal. Yeah, you go to gay bars. There's no gay bars. Supposedly. Okay.
Who am I? I'm clueless.
Okay. So, again, as I mentioned earlier, you educate the women. You go to the WIC program. You get the information out there. You go to the women's clinic. You go... And one of the neat things that we're doing, one of the outreaches, I think that every year it's sort of having that.
I could just tangential, but kind of along those lines. I can see why that would be a tough sell, because you're going to people and talking to people, WIC program people, women with children, who have a presumption of monogamy.
Mm-hmm.
if I could say that. Mm-hmm. And you're telling them that maybe they shouldn't be as presumptuous as they may be. And not only beyond that, but that they should go back and share that non-presumption of monogamy, heir to the side of safety, perhaps, mm-hmm. with their partner. And yeah, that's an uphill struggle.
But it's just, that's just the education part. You know, okay, you guys have been monogamous, you're faithful to each other, but what about the past? You know,
But what about right now?
You know, or right now, too. But, you know, but that's what that presumption is, that, you know, right now, that thinking, okay, I'm married, you know, I'm faithful, we're, you know, just together.
Well, and we've had children, so I've already been tested.
I want to share one good example, one good story. Is a woman was in, she worked in this area. She was doing prevention. She was doing HIV education to the Latino community down in San Diego. She was a Latina. And basically, you know, the same thing. She thought she was in a monogamous relationship. Guess what? She was down in Mexico doing outreach down in Tijuana. Who does she see but her husband with a prostitute? You know, does she know that he was using protection? Does he know that she's not carrying any HIV? You know, it's just one of those big wake-up calls that you really, really, really never know.
Right, but I guess people who presume they're monogamous are like teenagers who presume that they're bulletproof and are never going to...
Well, that's where we also do, you know, we also get, you know, our department gets a little bit of money for HIV services. But that's when we're doing our assessment for alcohol and drug treatment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another question is, have you had, you know, multiple partners?
Yeah.
And if they say yes, are you having sex with your boyfriend or girlfriend? And these are kids. These are teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
They say yes. You know, are you using them? The other question is, are you using protection? No. You know what? Then we come in. Guess what? You know, it'd be a good idea to get tested for HIV, you know, STDs, you know. Oh, but, you know, he looks fine. He's fine, you know. You never know.
Well, look
at that's the education.
Yeah.
You know, how do you know? You know, how? And then we sometimes make a little graph but...
I believe that's where you want to start educating when they're younger. I don't know.
Yeah, that's almost makes sense to me.
Because, but basically the range in Imperial County is basically, and this is a large range, it's from 20 to 49-year-olds are 83% of the cases.
Wow.
You know.
That we have for
HIV positive. That's the range, 20 to 49 years old.
20?
To 49 years old, yeah. So, you know, within that range, if you're in that range, I mean, that's where most of
you know, people are having sex here, because, you know, there's a lot of kids.
Uh-oh.
You know, no. They're starting young, you know, there's a lot of teen pregnancy, so.
Oh, yeah, I worked in family planning, and I worked at probably one of the busiest clinics, and I worked now at El Centro Clinic, where, you know, it's synonymous. I think that you're working with reproductive health and you're working with sex, it makes sense to do the HIV education, STD, and they do, you know, the family planning practitioners.
Well, because if nothing else, it's a biological drive.
Right.
You know, it's...
But then if you mix it up with, you know, where we work, Scott, you know, the alcohol and drugs, you know, then you're impaired, your behavior, you just...
So that puts you at a greater risk. Yeah, definitely if you're drinking and, you don't have that...
And kids thinking that, you know, nothing can happen to them.
Exactly, yeah.
337-8874 is the phone number. We're here with Greg Curran. Did I get it right that time? It's still all over the place in my head.
Either way, current, not on. I like that. <Karan. laughs> In fact, we just named my great grandniece our last name. We named her Karan.
Nice.
Okay.
Nice. Well, so I was kind of precedent in that. He's program manager for Clinica de Salud del Pueblo, and 30% of him is the HIV program manager. So we're talking to that 30% of him today.
Yeah, so 30
to go. We're all right, Dad. We're in all the same
boat. You're struggling now with less prevention staff, with less outreach, but you also have to engage the community that's HIV positive and support them. Is that part of your activities?
It's a struggle because people don't want to be known as HIV positive in this community. It's a small community. That's why, you know, that stigma is still chipping away at stigma.
You get thanks, but no thanks, huh?
Yeah, I mean, the people will come in for services, and we have our night clinics at night, so that they're not coming in for services with the regular population.
Wow.
And that's still because...
Stigma, baby.
Exactly.
In a weird way.
Yeah. And so you basically, they're not doing it with the general population. So we still have to provide that. Otherwise, you're not going to... we'll be able to get that population.
It might be that yes, a heterosexual male has HIV and he doesn't want to be labeled as being gay. Maybe he got the HIV from a prostitute, or it could be his girlfriend, or you don't know. But it was from a female. And now
if he's 22 years old, his mom could have been HIV positive and given it to him at birth.
You know, and a lot of people aren't going to want to hear this, but I'm a gay man, okay? And I'm attracted to Latino men.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, you hook up one way or the other, online or whatever, and a majority of the people that I have don't identify as gay, the people that I connect with. I find out later that a lot of them are married. So it's just one of those things, that
closeted bisexuals.
Yeah, or just, I truly believe there are people who are genuinely bisexual,
mm-hmm.
or actually
exactly.
are heterosexual and just have sex with men also. I don't know. It's just, I didn't believe it at first.
Our population here are gay, lesbian, bisexual, transsexual, and is it now with a Q? The queer, it's just to be the GLB.
You're actually literally questioning.
And then there's the Q. But it's a small, it's just, you don't hear that much, there was, but it's just not here.
No, people don't come out too much in the valley, and I can understand.
No, they move out.
They come, when they move out, or they stay here and they're closeted, or they do it on the down low. But the other thing that you were talking about youth earlier, with all the modern technology and texting and all these different sites that MySpace and Facebook and things like that, the availability or the potential for people to have sex at a younger age and more partners and anonymous, and they feel more open and free to express themselves when it's anonymous like that.
So it puts them more at risk.
Well, of course. Yeah.
It puts them more at risk.
Yeah. And I don't know how much time we have, but one thing that I want to just really... we took an extrapolation of... I want to go over some stats. It has increased from about 33 million to 40 million worldwide cases of AIDS. And this is from a...
and these are AIDS, not HIV. Again.
No, I'm sorry. This is HIV.
HIV, okay.
Yeah. 40.3 million. Now, from 33.3.
So it's going up.
Yeah, so it's going up. And this was a study done with the Kaiser Family Foundation. In California alone, there's 40,000 cases. They estimate 7,000 new cases reported each year.
That's identified and reported.
And
again, if you shut down the testing mechanism.
If you don't test, yeah.
And that's the thing, getting back to Imperial County, is basically our numbers are... The county department of public health, they get all the statistics, okay? They get all the statistics, and basically it's just those people that come in and get results and get their results, but they're not taken into consideration. We don't have those numbers for the people who get tested in Mexico or other counties and come in and access services. So, the numbers that they have, I think, is 210 that are definitely... diagnosed here in the county.
But they're positive.
But you could double that, triple that.
Well, and mm-hmm. I guess what would your odds be that you would contract HIV and carry HIV and not get tested because you weren't putting yourself in situations where the medical profession wanted to test you? And it seems like that would be there would be a certain portion of people where that would be true. Your stealth people. Who don't even know it themselves because they're relatively healthy. They're not,
And that's one of the statistics that I wanted to emphasize. Okay, so you get the numbers that we do have, and this is conservative.
Yeah.
Okay, and you take these numbers just like they do the worldwide, they do the statewide, and we extrapolate. And so we estimate there's 177 people walking around in Imperial Valley who don't even know they're HIV positive possibly having sex and spreading, transmitting that to some other people. And that, again, I said that's conservative. That's the people who don't know for one reason or other, didn't come back for the results. And so, you know, people aren't aware of this. They're not aware that they're carrying the virus.
Oh, they've never, ever been tested because they don't even really, because of the stigma and the denial and everything else.
Everything.
Exactly.
Cultural,
exactly.
Everything.
It's not like people who are having unprotected sex typically get tested, I would think.
Yeah.
But I don't see any lines at the health department. I know there's a lot of adults having sex, you know.
Yeah.
And typically, basically, you know, if you fall into that category, basically, you a lot of times it takes 10 years to develop any symptoms. So,
wow.
You know, at Clinicut, most of our patients come in, a great majority of them come in through the emergency room when they went to the hospital and they had an opportunistic infection. And at the same time, that's when they got their AIDS diagnosis. So we didn't have them in the medical services when they're HIV positive, asymptomatic.
Mm-hmm.
We get them in there. And so that's a bigger challenge because who knows if they got infected with a resistant strain or not. So it's kind of challenging and kind of, putting together the treatment options for them.
Well, and they could have been everybody's best friend for the past 10 years.
Yes. How many partners did they have? And how much unprotected sex they had during those past 10 years? And how many...
Single adult community.
Yeah.
No. Even the, as he suggests, the married adult community, who knows?
But, I'm concerned, of course, we live in a border, this is a part of border county, and we have this huge population in Mexicali. You know, I don't know what the population is now. It's in the millions.
Mm-hmm.
And the lack of funding, you know, the cooperation and working together, these two countries, you know, Calexico and Imperial Valley and Mexicali Valley working together, probably lack of funding, does that exist? I mean, do you work together or?
Well, yeah, and that's a good question because one of the outreach events we do yearly is with the Binational Health Week, and that's with the Health Initiatives of Americas, but they work closely with other organizations in the Valley. The clinic has programs that works directly with the consulate, and then recently in October, the HIV treatment update program is we invited the providers, doctors that works in the Capacit and in the general hospital over in Mexicali to come over and do the presentation. The presentation was given all in Spanish, and we got to see, you know, what the situation is like in the Mexicali, and then, you know, part of the thing is networking, get together so that we can collaborate. Because one of the things that we don't get and we would like to see happen and we're working towards getting is their numbers over there, basically, of people
how
who
many?
Across the border.
Then that's what I'm kind of, you know, wondering, how many cases of HIV do they have in Mexicali?
And still, you know, you don't get a really accurate because...
And do they do blood tests in the emergency room?
Yeah. I mean, do they have the funding?
But, you know, from what I heard at that presentation... You know, they do have services. They have mobile units that go around and do HIV testing in all the states in Mexico. And everybody is eligible for medical services. The only caveat the only barrier that I've seen was basically maybe it takes longer to get into services, like maybe 6 months to get in it. But everybody, you know, depending on what kind of job they have, and if they don't have income, basically it's always the general hospital, I consider the general hospital over there, they do have access to treatment. So there is treatment over there. There's Dr. Gomez also, who is an HIV specialist that works in Mexicali and has a program, Amigo, which does a lot of education. So, you know, there are services, and we know each other. We are working together.
They don't have any numbers, like any...
But they have numbers, but I'm saying they're skewed because, you know, they're... Just like, here, you know, county has to get, they only can give us the information, the public information that they can prove, okay? It's up to advocates and activists like, you know, like me to actually get the real truth out there about the numbers, but basically it's the same situation. You get diagnosed over in Mexico. You come over here, you're a binational patient, you can cross the border, but you got diagnosed over there. We don't get the numbers, and basically a lot of times when they do get tested, it's still corrupt enough that you could, you know, say you could buy your diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you're, you know, so you can get another diagnosis, you know, other than AIDS or something like that, even on your death certificate.
Oh, wow.
So nobody really knows the exact numbers.
And the way why I was talking about Mexicali is because, again, the young people here in the Valley go, you know, they wait for the weekend. You know, people, the young kids here at IBC, at the high school, they wait for the weekend. They go to Mexicali to go to the clubs and to drink and...
Hey, I was there when I was in the Navy. I like, can't wait to go to Tijuana.
That's how much, you know, how many, you know, it would be that they can, like you were mentioning, that there's no numbers yet.
Yeah.
That's kind of concerning.
Well, and the numbers would help people to make better decisions about how to manage the risk. Is that the bottom line there?
What was the question?
The numbers would help people to make better decisions about how to manage risk.
If they paid attention to them,
mm-hmm.
I was almost going to go there.
If there was more
money for outreach, prevention, education, where, you know, we're limited. We got a big county to cover with the few people that we have. You know, if we had more money to do outreach and bring back what that one position we called the bridge worker, get somebody to incorporate, you know, volunteers and actually peers, other people, try to educate them so that they get empowered and they're not so fearful of exposing their HIV status. It's so much more powerful to get someone to talk about HIV that is Latino or Latina from this community, and who do they have as a spokesman in the Valley is, you know, a gay white guy. You know, that doesn't relate. You know, and so I try to empower as many people as I can and get them involved.
You know, just in terms of risk, as you suggested, now it is a manageable condition. Treatment, I think, is still pretty expensive. Is this something where if somebody contracts HIV today, do you really honestly think that they can count on the government for the next 35 to 40 years to consistently help support them in treatment?
It's teetering. Very.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, the ADAP is always at risk. Thank God it hasn't really, but the formulary gets less and less. And, yeah, of course, you know, there's a possibility. And the ADAP is the AIDS Drug Assistance Program,
right,
through California. I mean, they have it in all the different states, but California has a really great formulary, and some states have a waiting list. We aren't there yet. I forget what the numbers are that we serve, but I know at Clinicas alone, we have patients that access the AIDS Drug Assistance Program, like 50 of our patients.
Mm-hmm.
I've been more than that. The 50 number comes from people that we don't case manage, or people that we don't provide medical care services for, that come just for ADAP,
mm-hmm.
which is, of course, again, the case manager and myself. We do this on a voluntary basis. We don't get any reimbursement for doing the AIDS Drug Assistance Program enrollment. And basically, we're also taking the patients from Riverside because of the funding cuts. There's, you know, a few people who do AIDS Drug Assistance Program enrollment that don't have any workers up there to do that. So we get some of the cases down here from Riverside. Becca.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've got World HIV or World AIDS Day coming up real soon. I was thought it's tagged in my head somewhere around Pearl Harbor, in early December, basically.
Uh-huh.
Tell us about what's going on and what you've got coming up in the community and where people can get more information, and let's make sure and get lots of let's take advantage of this moment to get some of the message out to the community that we might otherwise not.
Okay. I mentioned earlier, on October, every October we do the HIV treatment update, so if people are slanted toward getting that type of information, you know, that's every October. And what they do is talk about the HIV transmission, epidemiology, what the statistics are in the Valley, and basically mm-hmm. the treatment, what's in the future of treatment. And so, you know, if you want that kind of information, we do that every October. Again, that's through donations, generous donations, volunteers. We don't mm-hmm. really have funding to put that money to provide that. and pay for the venue, pay for the speakers or anything like that. That's all donations.
Is that information and data then disseminated at other points, like maybe posted on the internet or something? I mean, I'm speaking, I guess, as a parent of a child who will begin to encounter their own sexuality in a matter of years. Maybe that would be important information for me to have in terms of educating her about her choices.
That particular thing, it's usually people who were there know about it and maybe want a copy of the slides. But, you know, again, our other program, CCG, the Community Challenge Grant, they go out there, and now you can access the web and various places and get your information. Yeah, so
what do you guys got coming up?
Okay, World AIDS Day, you're right. It's a first.
Somewhere else
every December 1st, and that's easy to remember. It's the first day of December. And basically this year what we're trying to do is a little different slant. Used to be that HIV was in commemoration, or the World AIDS Day, I'm sorry, was in commemoration of remembering those people who were before us and led the fight, and remembering those people, remembering those people who died and gave their lives, for the activism and things like that. Basically was to honor those people.
Sure.
And it has evolved because, the treatment and everything like that, and we still want to do that. We still want to make it a sort of like a memorial type service. But this year, because I've learned dealing with the stigma, if somebody's not going to show up to an event that's advertised just for HIV/AIDS, I'm not at risk. Why do I want to go there? We're making it this year a health fair where there's all kinds of different services provided, and maybe they just might pick up some information or education on HIV. And we get it to them that way. But there's going to be a lot of different activities. I'm excited. There's going to be the Dr. George.
You've been talking to the marketing people.
Which I wanted. I've asked him to come, so I'm trying to still get him in.
Who?
Dr. George Free.
Oh, in here?
Yes.
Oh, he will. He will. He's a good guy. He's done so much. But that's why we honored him with that award. He was there from the very beginning.
Yeah.
And so we named the HIV. Dr. George Fried HIV Community Service Award. So that award goes to a person who is deserving. And so we have a nomination. Mm-hmm. We have a nomination selection committee. And that's one of the big events is we're going to acknowledge one person that's working in HIV because, like you can see, without the funding, we're still doing a lot of stuff, even without the funding. And there's a lot of hard workers, a lot of dedicated and compassionate people out there. I think it's very important to acknowledge them. So that's one way is during the World AIDS Day. Well, the other event we're going to have is we're going to have a memorial garden or a chapel of memory where we're going to, do a lot of Kathy Dunn, or another person that works at Clinicas, is creating something unique. And we're going to have a candlelight vigil, and one of the neatest things that we've had, the youth involved the last couple of years using the, what is the band here in El Centro, the high school, Central Union Band?
The Spartan.
Central Union High School?
The Spartan Band.
Is it the Spartan Band?
The great Spartan Band.
Okay. Well, anyway.
Some of the past, too.
The fantabulous Spartan Band.
We had them the last 2 years, and they energized. They energized the World AIDS Day. We did dance for awareness, where people who got up there and danced got a free T-shirt, and they set the stage. They got everybody. Of course, they marched in at the beginning. They opened it up. This year, they're going to do. They're all going to wear red shirts and do the symbol of the red ribbon, which is the symbol for awareness for HIV and AIDS. And then probably they'll be doing the dancing. A lot of the dancing again. We're going to give the free T-shirt again this year. We're going to have a lot of different booths. So it is an opportunity for people from anywhere, it could be retail, it could be nonprofit, to have exhibit booths there. And basically...
We should be there, too.
Yeah, I think that would be great.
Oui, that's French for yes, right?
Yes, oui.
And I just want to take this slowly because it's getting so close to the date. Yep. But if you want more information, and if you want an exhibit booth, and you want to be part of this event and get involved in some way, Lalita. Everybody remember that name, Lalita? She's our case manager, and she could be reached at 760-344-6471 and her extension is 258. Again, that's Lalita, 760-344-6471, extension 258. To become part of the World AIDS Day event on December 1st.
Where's that event going to be held?
It's going to be held at the Sonic. That's the other thing. The owner of the Sonic has donated a whole lot more than just the venue and the space. He's gotten really involved and is on the planning committee. So Sonic is being very, very supportive of this event. And also, you know, I know they do something for the cancer community, too. And they do an event every year there. So they're very supportive.
Oh, good. So, and I know, well, you know what? Now I'm going to go eat more at Sonic.
Yeah. And then maybe we'll get more.
Thanks for coming aboard today, Greg.
Thank you so much.
So thanks for having me. I always enjoy the opportunity to get information out.
And people can track you down at Clinic Asistente de Pueblo.
Exactly. Just remember my name, and then I work at El Centro Clinic now. And people will know who I am.
Right over the bridge on Clark. Is that the...
Actually, we're on Wake.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Wake Avenue.
That's your part.
And it's going to be on the podcast now.
All right.
So you can, you know, at KXOradio.com. So it'll be...
You can post your link on Facebook to your podcast on KXO.
Okay, we'll do.
Social networking.
I know. Hey.
Well, thank you all for listening.
Thank you. And, also, forgot to mention, this Saturday, Philly Cook-Off, Bali, starts.
And that's a bonus round of community
Calendar. Yes, their cattle call starting, so. Woohoo!
We're selling food at cattle call.
You see?
Great. Go out there and support all the hard work.
We'll be right there by White Cross Pharmacy selling all kinds of different foods and soda. Wad water is a biggie.
Great. All right, join there.
Okay.
Have a good time.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It. Heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUVO 88.7 FM, Carter Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXOradio.com.